Welcome everybody to another episode here at the Damage Report. Big Thursday show, tons of news to get to. It's one of those shows that like while I'm still producing, I'm thinking, why am I still adding stories? We're not gonna get to them all, but there's just so much that I want to comment on. And more importantly than that, that I want Viviana to comment on, because Viviana Vigil joins us once again. How's it going, Viviana?
I'm doing great. I'm staying at home, so I'm alive.
Awesome. That's good to hear. I'm trying to remember, is this the first time you've been on since the election? Have we talked since the election? We did, okay.
No, yeah, okay, I was on right before the election.
Yes.
And you know what, I need to make a public apology, actually. Because I was certain that we were going to be under Nazi rule for another term. And I have been scaring the hell out of people for 4 years. And so I wanna make a public apology. I was wrong, and when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. And I'm super glad, and I'm shocked, and I have a little ounce of hope that actually people in this country care enough about an ounce of dignity. So thank you for everybody who put up with me, and I apologize to any of you that I might have scared. I was scared. I was just operating from fear.
Don't worry. There's nothing I want more than for our darkest predictions to occasionally not come true, okay? Usually they're pretty much accurate, and that's disappointing. Sometimes things are far worse. You know, for all the warnings I gave people in 2016 about how things would turn under Trump, I would have never predicted 2020. So no, things being a little bit better, sign me up for that. I'll take that. And glad to have you back on. There's a lot to talk about. And for all of you who are watching, whether you're on Twitch or the members app, or if you're on YouTube or anything like that, thank you for joining us. Please let people know that the stream is live by liking it or sharing it or whatever they want you to do on those things. If you send us comments, messages, tweets, and all of that, we'll be responding as we go along. With that said though, there's a lot to get to. So Viviana, why don't we jump right into it?
Jump.
We've been giving you daily updates on the stimulus negotiations, and things have been moving in a better direction. But that doesn't mean that there isn't time for the Republicans to slip in just a few more insults to the people who've been suffering so much and waiting for their government to actually act like they give a damn about it. And so for that, we turn to Senate Republican Whip John Thune, a member of the Senate Finance Committee, who tells people that now they are considering stimulus checks that'll be up to $600 to $700. Per individual, which is a little bit higher than he had been saying a couple days ago, although still a very small amount for people who are probably behind months on their rent. But you also potentially getting $300 a week in supplemental federal unemployment assistance through March. So a few months, okay, that'll take us at least to some of the vaccinations. And so that's, you know, the checks are half the size of what they were the first time around, Viviana. The unemployment aid is half of what it was the last time around. That isn't actually the insult. We'll get to the insult in just 1 second, but this is the first we've been able to talk about the stimulus. So what do you think so far about the approach the government has taken?
I think this is a taste of the care that is yet to come, which is to say it's half-assed and sad. I'm not good at math, John, but if we got $1,200 in March, April, and the pandemic had literally just begun, and now we're months and months in, you know, it's not an algebra equation. You don't need to be a genius to figure out the numbers aren't adding up. And I don't know one person that can really get by with an extra $600. I mean, it is boggling. We should have been getting $1,200 every month. I mean, the number of people that are suffering. Food banks across the country have lines and lines. People are not paying their rent. The thing that's so bad about that is, okay, there might be an eviction moratorium, and I think that this new stimulus package may offer that protection as well, but they're gonna have to pay that money back. So it's like feudal times and like indentured servitude at this point. You're gonna be in such debt. How can they expect the economy to recover? We are just now really getting into the real nasty part of this pandemic. So we have yet to see what's to come. And if this is what's offering, they're offering. I mean, thank God we have people like Bernie Sanders and AOC at least fighting for the proletariat.
Thank God, yeah. Yeah, and this is what we're getting after that fighting. The initial offer was even more pathetic.
With zero.
Look, in theory, like them leaving us with nothing after the CARES Act for month after month after month after month wouldn't have been as bad if they're like, okay, we're not gonna do anything for you, but we are gonna try to get the disease, the numbers of infections and deaths to go down. So we're gonna encourage lockdowns, we're gonna encourage masks and everything. But they didn't do that either. It was, we're not gonna give you the money. We're gonna pretend that stopping the lockdowns will stimulate the economy, but we're gonna do everything we can to spread the disease as much as possible. So a lot of people get sick and die, and that'll hurt the economy. So really, it's the worst of both worlds. You get no government aid, and you have a high chance of getting sick or dying. That's what they've given us so far. And now the most recent insult. So Senate Republican Whip John Thune said that there could be language in the deal aimed at addressing concerns that people who receive both enhanced unemployment benefits and stimulus checks would be getting a double benefit. Okay, you can't just say, and look, it's not, that full thing isn't a quote from John Thune. So whoever wrote this in The Hill is sort of saying it. Addressing concerns, who has those concerns? That was literally not even a thing I was thinking about. And I haven't heard a lot of people like, we want a government aid, but we don't want too much of it. Help us, but not double. That those are not concerns that anyone has, except perhaps Senate Republican Whip John Thune.
Yeah, I mean, those concerns are clearly not from the senator. From the people. Those concerns are from the senator. Those concerns are from the politicians. I don't understand how they can be so callous and so just so removed from what it's like for regular people who aren't making a six-figure salary or more. To say they're going to be getting double benefit. I mean, and some of this aid is coming in food stamps. Some of this, I mean, Medicare. It's really unconscionable to have people act like if people are benefiting so much when families are being decimated, people are sick in the hospital. Let's even take aside the over 300,000 people that have died. We have people that are ill, not even just hospitalized people, people who have COVID that are stuck at home and are still sick. I think Ellen DeGeneres not that she's an angel, but she has COVID. We don't want her to be ill, obviously, but she's a prominent person who just reported that she's having severe back pain. You know, and she had some back problems years ago. So who knows all of the different things that are wrapped up in getting this illness? And we're just shrugging our shoulders. We have the senator just saying, you know, we don't want them to get double benefits. And these are people barely scraping by. Yeah. It's callous, it's sad, and it's really disgusting.
Yeah. Well, look, as we acknowledged earlier, as bad as this final deal looks like it's gonna be, the only reason it isn't worse is because we do have at least some people in government who took a stand earlier this week saying they weren't gonna support a bill that masqueraded as trying to help people out, but didn't actually provide direct benefits, the survival checks, the enhanced unemployment insurance, those sorts of things. I wanna show you one great example of that, which is Representative Ilhan Omar. Here she is talking about the state of the bill.
It's really quite shameful that we find ourselves negotiating a deal with such a small amount of money when we know just how devastated the American people are across our country. Think about it. In March, we were able to send $1,200 checks to people and give them $600 in unemployment insurance benefits. And now we're talking about possibly sending a one-time check 8 months later of $600 and reducing that unemployment benefit to $300. That is after 8 months of complete devastation that so many people have faced economically. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you just how embarrassing, shamefully yeah. I feel to be a member of Congress fighting for the livelihoods of people across this country. This is one of the wealthiest nations in the world. And we are not embarrassed enough as leaders in our country to see so many people line up to act urgently and accordingly.
Yeah. Yeah, and so thankfully she was one of the progressives that helped to push for these, including people like, as Ro Khanna acknowledged on Twitter, Bernie Sanders has been pushing like from the very beginning of the pandemic for the aid that finally we're getting a sort of minor second dip of. And so thanks to them, but yeah, the idea that the aid is about in almost every way half what it was in the early part of the pandemic, but the deaths are higher now, the hospitalizations are higher now, the case numbers are higher now. So the pandemic's much worse, but the aid is half as much. That's amazing. But it tells you everything you need to know about the government and what they feel their obligation to us is.
It really does. It really does. And it's sad to say, unfortunately, you know, we're very happy that Trump is leaving the White House, even though he's going to be kicking and screaming. Oh my gosh, it gives me so much joy. But we are in for essentially the Obama administration 3.0. And we're going to see, I mean, a lot of people praise a lot of Obama's, you know, effect on the country. But there was a lot of negativity. He's a very centrist president. And Biden coming in, also, he's really pandering to the right. And so we're going to see a lot of this. I mean, how disgusting that they weren't going to give anything. And then they're like, all right, here's a few coins. I mean, how Ebenezer Scrooge is that? Right during Hanukkah, right before Christmas. I mean, to be so greedy. I mean, these people could, why can't we just ask Jeff Bezos? Guess what, Jeff? You're giving everybody $1,200, okay? You're giving them all $1,200. You're not even gonna see the dent. They've already probably spent $500 with Amazon alone. So you're gonna give them $1,200 and that's gonna be the end of it. But that would be seen as some crazy communist thing in this country. But we're totally okay with having the government say, double benefits, unemployment. These are people who have worked, paid into unemployment. I mean, these are contributing members of this country, of our society. And we're gonna act like they don't deserve the money that they've put in already.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
I want to read for you a graphic that I have read probably more than any other single graphic through the course of this pandemic. And this is going way back to the very early days of the pandemic, when we found out from the Washington Post about a conversation that Donald Trump had behind closed doors with Dr. Fauci. And it was when Trump asked a question, an amazing question that not nearly enough people spent thinking about or talking about. But he said, "Why don't we let this wash over the country?" And he means, why don't we let everyone just get COVID? Multiple people confirmed that he asked this question. He apparently asked it repeatedly in the Oval Office. And Dr. Fauci was apparently confused by the term wash over, because it's nonsensical and you've just got to be constantly confused talking to Donald Trump. But once it was made clear what Trump meant, that just let everyone get the thing that we're all trying to stop people from getting, he said, "Mr. President, many people would die." And we've known from very early on in this thing that just allowing everyone to get it would kill at least a couple of million people, which I consider to be an unacceptable loss, but I'm not in government. What do I know? And so ever since then, ever since the first time we talked about that Washington Post story, we have been charting the progress of the herd immunity strategy. The strategy being just let everyone get COVID, which isn't really a strategy, but that's what they call it. And it's become increasingly clear as they brought in people like Scott Atlas and Donald Trump started talking about herd mentality in speeches, that this was a thing that they gradually came to accept as the strategy they should pursue. But it turns out, behind closed doors, they had actually been pursuing it much earlier. And we're finding this out thanks in part to some memos that have now been revealed from as early as July 4th, We have the then science advisor, Paul Alexander, wrote to his boss, Health and Human Services Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs, Michael Caputo, saying there is no other way. We need to establish herd, and it only comes about allowing the non-high risk groups expose themselves to the virus, period. They go on to say infants, kids, teens, young adults, young people, middle-aged with no conditions have zero to little risk, which we know is not true. So we use them to develop herd. We want them infected. And it gets even worse. On July 24th, said it may be that it will be best if we open up and flood the zone and let the kids and young folk get infected in order to get natural immunity, natural exposure. So we have more, and I certainly have more that I want to say. But Viviana, seems like it should be big news that these people behind the scenes were working to get as many people infected as possible.
Yeah, how sad is it that we're not surprised? That's the real tragedy here. There's no other way. There's no other way. Do these people have families? Do children live in bubbles by themselves and float around and take themselves to schools? I mean, do they not recognize that families live in pods with grandparents and great grandparents and aunts and uncles and people with diabetes? Do they not see this? It, you know, I have to actually think, and this is not in, you know, what Paul Alexander said, but I have to think that there were discussions about the number of elderly people that would pass and how the GOP shrugged their shoulders and thought that's less Social Security, that's less Medicare. I have to think that these conversations happen because all these people care about is money. And to think that there are, and I do believe that we're gonna have at least 500,000 people die in this country in the next few months. And that is very, very sad. I think the proportions in the Spanish flu were somewhere over 650,000 that we lost in this country. And that was 100 years ago. We can't fix, there's no other way. There's no other way. You're a scientist? I mean, I just took biology in high school and I can figure out more than this, Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, what if hypothetically, what if America wasn't the only country in the world? I know that it is, but bear with me. What if there were other countries that had pursued other strategies other than just letting everyone get it? What if we'd done that? And I can actually, in this hypothetical world that doesn't exist, I can imagine countries in Asia and even in Europe and stuff like that that didn't let everyone get it and didn't lose hundreds of thousands of people. But the thing about it is, again, I want to remind you, it is being presented as a strategy. It is not a strategy. It is a fail case. It is just, what if we didn't do anything and what if everyone got it? And you might think, well, why would you want to do that? Well, you'd want to do that if you really didn't want to do the stuff that stops people from getting it. If you really didn't want to try to prop up the economy while an extended lockdown was going on by providing aid to people so that everyone doesn't lose their jobs and a million businesses don't go under, you'd have to pay money. And the thing is, we have a lot of people in positions of power that care a hell of a lot more about that money than they do about people's lives. So if you believe those things about the world, then sure. Saying just give it to the kids and the teens and the young adults and we'll lie about the fact that they have zero to little risk when they do and many will die. And like Viviana said, along the way, like there's even behind the scenes, they're pretending that they're targeting it. That this is just let's let all the people that we think, even though we're wrong, we think won't die from it. Right. But where's the targeting? You just tell everyone in every way you possibly can, both in the government and in right-wing media, that this is a hoax that they don't have to care about. And that everyone should just mix and you can have these big gatherings and all of that. And everyone will just get, there's no protection. You're like every single person who watches Fox News is at minimum 76 years old. And they're being told every day that they don't have to worry about this thing. Yeah. There was no targeting. This was just let everyone get it and let the chips fall where they may. If we lose 500,000, fine, if we lose a million, if we lose 2 million, whatever, eventually we'll get past it and the stock market will have lived during that time.
I mean, do we expect more from a country that lets thousands die from cancer because they can't pay their bills or get the care that they need? Can we expect more from a country that lets kids not have insurance and get the care that they need? We do not pay for our sick here. We do not care about the health of the people in this country. The other countries that have put measures in place to prevent these massive deaths, they actually have socialized medicine. They actually recognize, whoa, this is gonna cost us a lot if we don't intervene. We don't care because we don't pay for it. We don't have a system that's in place that actually takes care of people. We have a system that exploits people and their illnesses. And in fact, goes further to make them ill with our food products and our pills and all these things that we're shoving down people's mouths. Yeah. I'm sad to say I'm not surprised. And it is really, really horrible the amount of people that have died, the amount of families who have been just devastated. Even if you're just ill and the breadwinner in the family can't work anymore, what about these kids? You know, who's gonna teach them? They're all learning from home. Who's gonna take care of these kids? They're not gonna die, maybe. We don't even know. We've had babies die, we've had young people die. So you're just gonna roll the dice because you can get flown to Walter Reed and you can get stem cells and et cetera, and enemas. I don't know what he got, but you can afford that. The rest of us can't.
Yeah, and they have access to it in the first place.
Where do they get these scientists?
The things that we don't have. Yeah, and like if you're a Trump fan and you're watching this, like I get that you're immune to caring that they've lied to you, but like they told you for months, Trump, Pence, all of them, and the media and Fox News, they told you we can open up the schools, we can open up the economy, and it's okay, people won't get it. They did not say open up the schools because we want the kids to get sick so that we can develop herd immunity. They said the kids won't get it, but behind closed doors, like 6 months ago, they were saying open up the schools so that the kids will get it, when we don't know the long-term health impacts of having COVID, even on kids. We don't know that 10% of these kids aren't gonna have neurological problems later on, or they aren't gonna develop some sort of heart problems later on. They wanted your kids to get sick and they lied to you about it. How does that not bother you? Like, there's supposed to be some sort of primal human thing where at all costs, protect your kids from harm. But they're lying to you. They lied to you month after month about the risk to your children, your future. And how many right wingers today are pissed off about this?
Yeah, this
how many
is
are even
thing
hearing with, about it? Fox News ain't gonna talk about it.
They sure aren't. And it's a sad state of affairs that you believe the conspiracy theories and you believe the lies that this president, self-serving president, has peddled to the American people. But we have, there is a thing called herd immunity. But it isn't just let the virus run rampant. Herd immunity takes place once you start vaccinating people and you can reduce the severity of the illness. And then that person can have it but not die from it. And then everybody can start to be exposed to a minimal level through vaccination. And then therefore, herd immunity through the country. It's very weird for a scientist to come through and pervert, is that the right word? Subvert? What herd immunity means. And you see Dr. Fauci's head spinning.
Yeah.
During this whole thing. Where's Dr. Birx? Her face. When she doesn't like what she hears, poor thing.
Exactly. Man, that's an interesting shot of Mike Pence. It is easy to forget that Mike Pence is sort of like technically in charge of the coronavirus response that the federal government has. I'm sure that from time to time he forgets that, but he is. And he has ever so rarely popped up to give us an update on how it's going. And did you know that today is actually an anniversary, an important anniversary of one of those times that he actually came out of his hole in the ground? 6 months ago, he published an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. And here it is. There isn't a coronavirus second wave, he said, the head of the coronavirus task force. That was insane then. But also, we knew looking ahead, that in especially because of the strategy that they were pursuing, encouraging people to get out there and get sick, that a lot more people were gonna get sick. So that was June 16th, okay? And in that, he closes his op-ed saying, the media has tried to scare the American people every step of the way, and these grim predictions of a second wave are no different. The truth is, whatever the media says, our whole of America approach has been a success. We've slowed the spread, we've cared for the most vulnerable, we've saved lives. And we've created a solid foundation for whatever challenges we may face in the future. That's a cause for celebration, not the media's fear mongering. And he's right, you know, like with 6 months of context now, I really do have to apologize. Because I remember back then, as now, I was doing like daily updates on how bad it was and how many people were getting sick. And we were showing you the way the media was misinforming people about the pandemic. And you know, we should have realized at that point, June 16th, what did we lost? Maybe 100,000 people at that point, that it couldn't get any worse. And then it did, of course. We've lost hundreds of thousands of additional people. And on this 6-month anniversary, I wanted to give you one more update. COVID Tracking Project, this is yesterday's report from them. We had 3,400 deaths reported in one day. Almost 250,000 cases in one day. And well over 100,000 people who are currently hospitalized with COVID around the country. In a time that, call it whatever you want, but it clearly isn't a second wave, because that was just media fear mongering.
You know, there's a word in Spanish that it's sin vergüenza, and it means without shame. And for someone who claims to be a Christian and following a Christ-like life, he is shameless. He is holding on to this power. He is kissing the ass of Donald Trump. It is a really, for the amount of people that this man is willing to let die, it just shows the level that he is a sinvergüenza. I've actually heard that Pence is going to get into real estate, just like Trump. He and his wife, who he affectionately refers to as mother, are looking into buying an old motel up in Oregon. I think it's called the Bates Motel, where they're going to live, and they're going to continue the process of just murdering as many people as they can.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen that article.
I think I saw a movie based on the article, actually. That would be an improvement, because a lot fewer people would die if he was butchering them in showers. Yeah, and so look, he was wrong, and he was part of a government that at that point had already made a ton of wrong decisions and was misinforming people and was encouraging people to do the things that would get many people killed. And so it's one thing to be wrong. Like, we've criticized, you know, like members of the media for their terrible predictions about how this would go. That's one thing. Members of the media only have so much ability individually, unless, you know, they have audiences of millions, to really influence this thing. Like, if I have a bad prediction, okay, you can laugh at me. I'm not like determining the course of America's public health, but Pence was in charge. He could have done something. And so this isn't just being wrong about what happened. His advocacy, his actions and lack of actions led to this result. It led to us being in a position where the coronavirus task force, which again, remember, he's in charge of, had this to say very recently: this surge is the most rapid increase in cases, the widest spread of intense transmission, with more than 2,000 counties in COVID red zones, and the longest duration of rapid increase, now entering its 8th week that we have experienced. Despite the severity of the surge and the threat to the hospital systems, many state and local governments are not implementing the same mitigation policies that stem the tide of the summer surge that must happen now. And ask yourself, why are they not? Why is it that even though things today are worse than they've ever been in the pandemic, why are we doing far less than we had earlier? Well, you can chalk it up to Mike Pence and people like Mike Pence, who have scared people and governments into thinking that any sort of action is against the Constitution, or it's anti-American, or whatever. Or they're just afraid of being criticized by Donald Trump. They're afraid of being threatened by their constituents. There was a Republican mayor in Kansas who just stepped down this week from her position because she approved of mask mandates that the city council had passed. It wasn't even her that did it. She just approved of it. And she and her family experienced so many threats that she gave up her position as mayor. That is how you get to this position. It's not just wrong, it's causal. They led to this surge. And yet somehow, each of these deaths, it's nobody's fault. Another 100,000 people could and probably will die in the next couple of months, and it's nobody's fault. Nobody's going to jail. They've barely lost their jobs. That's the most accountability we have, is that Mike Pence is going to have to go into real estate.
I mean, this is the equivalent of an engineer saying that the Golden Gate Bridge is going to collapse. It's very expensive to demolish it. And someone like Mike Pence goes, well, we should just let as many people cross it as possible, and then the weight of it will just self-collapse, and then that'll take care of the problem. He's the head of a coronavirus task force, but all he's doing is saying, hey, you're all gonna die, but not really, but you might. Mm-hmm. How can they sit back and do nothing?
Yeah, so wrong. And like, You know what? Let's go into very briefly. I understand we're probably gonna have to go over, but so look, we're marking the 6 month anniversary of Mike Pence being so wrong, and really just hoping that they're, even though as you said, he's shameless, he's not going to apologize or admit that he was wrong. But a couple of months ago, he was on the news and they brought it up then how wrong he was. Now bear in mind, we're gonna show you some video. This is before the worst surge, okay? He was already wrong by so much then. This is August 21st, several months ago. We had already lost 174,000 people. So you remember, it was about 130,000 dead Americans ago. So here he is, and he is going, I want you to watch when the news person says the predictions for how many could die. Take a look at his body language here.
Just so people know, was how many more Americans will lose their lives by the end of the year. The IMHE model that you look at, I know, projects it could be 300,000 by the end of the year. One more thing on China, the president did suspend travel from China, did not suspend travel from Europe until mid-March. And a lot of the cases that did come to the eastern United States are believed to have come of there.
So did you see that? When the news person said 300,000, which it turned out was an underestimate. We're gonna lose like probably 20 or 30,000 more people than that. He just did this. He shook his head. That's not that guy's prediction. It's not the news's prediction. That's what the scientists were saying. And what do you know? Turned out they were really right. This is like way before this most recent surge. And they apparently had figured it out. That's about how many have died. They were a bit off, a bit low. We've lost more, like 10% more than that. But he just shakes his head. And he's wrong again, wrong in June, wrong in July, wrong in August, but it doesn't matter because being wrong, even if it leads to thousands and thousands of people dying, there's no consequences. Our system has no consequences for getting thousands of people killed. It seems like an issue. Maybe we should look into that in the future.
No accountability. I noticed one of your viewers commented that, you know, this is fear propaganda, is talking about wearing masks and talking about thousands of people in the country dying every single day. These are called facts, people. They're not, it's not fear propaganda. I have relatives that are like, you guys are living in fear wearing masks. I wear shoes, okay? I'm not living in fear of stepping on a tack out in the road or a piece of glass. I'm just being proactive. And I'm putting shoes on my feet so that I don't get a jagged piece of metal and get tetanus shoved in my foot. This whole idea that we're afraid and living in fear because we're trying to be proactive and prevent death is just as bad as acting like nothing's going on. I mean, if your relative dies and you just go, well, you know, it's on our way to herd immunity. I guess we didn't need grandma that much. She's doing her part for the country. Like if these elderly people are soldiers or something, we're just sending them off to battle.
That's a great point. And I would say that, well, you're right that it's not proof that we're living in fear. I would say, look, even if that was why you were doing it, let's say you're doing it because you're afraid. You're afraid of getting COVID. Okay, you should be. Hundreds of thousands of people are getting it literally every single day. And I wanna hear more about how I shouldn't live in fear of imaginary things from a community that I'm imagining the Venn diagram has a great deal of overlap, who stock their house with like 30 assault rifles because they believe a pack of cannibal scavengers are gonna break into their house. These are the people that we should be going to for threat assessments. Right. No,
hundreds of thousands of people that were afraid of the, go ahead, John.
I was gonna say hundreds of thousands of people weren't killed Mad Max style by bandits, but hundreds of thousands have died from COVID. So I would argue that we're doing a little bit better in estimating which threats we need to watch out for.
Well, they play up the threats that are convenient to them, just the same as they were so afraid of the Black Panther Party. And they're so much as they're afraid of Black Lives Matter, that they're this militant group that wants to take over and burn everything. That's fear-mongering. That is exactly what put Kyle Rittenhouse in the streets murdering people. That is fear mongering. Not us saying, hey, wear a mask, stay inside, don't have a massive party for Thanksgiving. That's the difference. But our country, our politicians make decisions based on capitalism, make decisions based on the bottom line. They have not, I don't know if ever, but definitely not, and for several decades, make decisions based on the welfare of the people, made decisions based on human capital. And we cannot expect that to change for many years, John. We are not going to see that change with the Biden administration. I mean, I don't know if you agree with that, but it's definitely not going to happen in these four years.
No, I think he's the best. I think he's better than Bernie, actually.
No. How dare you, sir?
You win some, you lose some. Okay, so we don't get fundamental change, but we did get Pete Buttigieg in the cabinet. So that is good. He's gonna be in charge of transportation, so I'm not worried anymore. Anyway, I'm never gonna let that go. Anyway, yes, I certainly agree. We gotta replace a lot more of them in office. We've done a good job with a few, but we need to do 10, 20, 30 times as many. Really fast, let's turn to one other little part of this. So Chris Christie was one of the Republicans in one of the earlier waves of them getting COVID, because of course they were going to, because they weren't protecting themselves, because they thought it was a hoax and they were fundamentally wrong. But he did survive. Chris Christie survived his time with the virus, and he is now trying to take it a little bit more seriously. And he is in an ad, actually, that is encouraging people to wear masks. Let's take a look at that.
This message isn't for everyone. It's for all those people who refuse to wear a mask. You know, lying in isolation in ICU for 7 days, I thought about how wrong I was to remove my mask at the White House. Today, I think about how wrong it is to let mask wearing divide us, especially as we now know you're twice as likely to get COVID-19 if you don't wear a mask. Because if you don't do the right thing, we could all end up on the wrong side of history. Please wear a mask.
I think a lot of them are gonna end up on the wrong side of history, mask or not. But okay, Viviana, he's a Republican and he didn't take it seriously, but now he's trying to and he's got the mask. How much credit should we give to Chris Christie? And do you think that this will actually help?
I don't think it will help, but I give him a little bit of credit for stepping up and recognizing that he almost died. I don't want to diminish his use of masks, but it does look like he's using an old pair of boxer shorts for that mask, that blue one. I don't know how he couldn't have got a nicer mask. That one looks real nasty.
It does kind of look like
all stretched great. Out. Like what? Mm-hmm. You know, he has a big face, so he might have needed some extra fabric yardage. But I think we're going to see a lot of backpedaling. Because politicians, you know, this is how Trump got into office. It is a swamp. All of these people are the same, left, right, that they're all smashed in there. So they will say whatever they need to do. They will do whatever they need to do to stay in office, to be relevant. And that's what needs to change with this country. Now, unfortunately, a lot of people who supported the right thought that Donald Trump would be that change. And they weren't completely wrong, because there has been a change, but not for the good. And it definitely hasn't changed the swamp-like atmosphere of DC. So should we give him credit? I say yes, because there's still thousands of people dying. So if it makes one person wear a mask, then thank you, Chris Christie.
Yeah, I will give him credit. Mostly because doing this will result in conservatives attacking him. So there's some political cost, sort of. But let's also acknowledge that it took him 300,000 deaths before doing this. And imagine briefly some sort of alternate world where, like, 6 months ago, Chris Christie and every other Republican you can imagine in government, Trump and Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and Marjorie Taylor Greene and whoever, and then all of the personalities at Fox and a bunch of like conservative musicians and I don't know, someone who hunts on TV, all of them, all of their people got together. And all made ads encouraging people to wear masks and to socially distance. And everywhere you turned, you saw reminders that it was your patriotic duty. You know, it's part of being a good American is caring about the well-being of your neighbors and all that. If they had all done that, imagine how many fewer people would have died. There's nothing any of them could do that would have had a better chance of saving lives. And they didn't do that. Instead, they went in the opposite way. They started competing with each other to care the least about the virus, to get as many people sick and killed as possible. So I guess it's good to have a couple of them changing their mind now.
Here's what I'm afraid of, John, and let me know what you think of this. We're slowly seeing it. We're seeing it with the president. Now, he was already, you know, reading Breitbart and doing that whole thing before he got into office. And now that has just really escalated. Conspiracy theories. He's watching OAN. Is that how you say it? That news network. And I fear that videos like this Chris Christie one, and even if other Republicans or GOP politicians come forward, I fear that it's going to push the right further right into this, abandoning them, saying, oh, well, they've really sold out. We're really going to be patriots and fight for, I'm afraid that it's going to be further divisiveness, even within their own party.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's a good chance. Well, that's sort of why I was saying I give them a little bit of credit because of the potential costs. Like, they're far more likely to jettison any one of these people for going against the narrative. Like, maybe Trump at this point, maybe Trump and a couple of people at Fox News changing on this could actually get through to them. But they're not going to do that because they're doing, the grift is going very well for them. But yeah, I think it's more likely that now it's just, it's too baked in. Like, yeah.
But Trump saying, you know,
core political identity.
Wear a mask. We're gonna wear
exactly.
a mask.
Which is the best he's done. That's the best he's done, is like he'll wear a mask and then immediately undercut it. If early on, if he had said you need to do this, and if Fox News had done it, we would be sitting at 30,000 deaths. He would have been reelected probably. World would have been far better off, both for Trump and for everyone. You know, aside from four more years of him,
he blew his chance. He could have really done a decent, a minimal job, a half-assed job to try to get a hold of this pandemic. And the fact that and that CNN anchor did call Pence out on this, you know, about saying that he did the ban in China and Biden said it was racist. Well, it was, because you had Europe wide open. So yeah, it is racist to just say only the Chinese can't come. Like, if this is some weird world where you only live in a little bubble in your country. So they totally disregard other facts. They read the statistics the way they want. But if we had united as a country and just said, we're gonna wear masks, there still could be these little arguments about herd immunity and all of these things that have gone on. But we could have really protected a lot of the country. And it is really sad that we're just in the middle of it right now. We don't even know what's really gonna happen, not just with thousands and thousands more dying, but economically at the other end of this. I mean, it's gonna be pretty bad.
Yeah, we're left hoping it'll be just 200,000 more dead. Like, we'll just hit 500,000, then that'll be it. Everyone will be vaccinated. Man, what a failure.
No one's scared, okay. John. Why isn't anyone scared? Left,
know,
right, center. I don't care who you're talking to. Even people who are against Trump are out there saying, well, you got to live your life. I got to go out. I can't do this. I get it. I'm tired of it too.
We're all tired.
But there are a lot of people doing that where they think that they wear masks because they wear it inside the CVS. Well, that's not enough. Just because you're mandated to wear it inside a store, that doesn't mean you're being safe. Yeah. We're in a bad place.
Yeah.
Sorry to be depressed, everyone.
Have been for some time. One of the potential benefits of Joe Biden becoming president is that in theory, it means an end to the wall and the wall construction and the money being spent on the wall. Biden said this summer that he would not build another foot of the border barriers, which is good. Obviously, good to not follow Trump's path in building this massive, expensive, unnecessary, offensive, xenophobic wall. Hopefully, also, this is an assertion that he's not going to do the sorts of things that many Democrats have done in the past, which is support fencing and those sorts of things, or even non-physical barriers that are massive waste of time that demonize people who are trying to get the country, all of that. But anyway, if he does this, what could some of the economic benefits be? Well, the US government would apparently save about $2.6 billion if he immediately halts construction on the border wall on his first day. This is according to the US Army Corps of Engineers. I'm sure the right is going to love demonizing that organization now that they've said that a lot of money could be saved. As of right now, to give you an update, the Trump administration has been able to complete 738 miles of border wall. It received $15 billion in federal funding, about one third of which came from Congress as part of the standard appropriations process, and which I would say 100% of which was a massive waste of money that could have been better spent on literally anything. Nearly $3.3 billion in unused funds will remain in the project's account when Biden begins his term, and in theory that could then be transitioned to something else. So we have a little bit more on this, but Viviana, maybe an end of the wall. That's good news, right? Coming up in just a few weeks.
Absolutely. This is Frank took him to join us. Frank is also, he's undocumented. The wall didn't keep him out. So, he doesn't have any papers. But, I'm hoping that this obviously stopping the construction of 700 miles. I mean, maybe if we were like a little tiny country, that would help, but that's nothing. But I'm hoping that that money can then be used for another stimulus bill. Can you imagine? They can't give people $1,200, but they can spend this much money on a fake nothing symbol, xenophobic symbol. I mean, it's just really, it's something that I'm hoping. I don't have a lot of hopes for Biden's administration, but I'm hoping that this money will be put to good use. And also the people who have supported the wall bill, the building the wall, I mean, haven't they already been humiliated enough just throwing money at people that are buying yachts? I mean, Trump, and I know you've talked about this a lot on the show, Trump asking people for money just to put it in his own pocket. And they're still doing it. They don't care. They really think that they're standing up for what's right in this country. And, you know, I'm hoping that not only will the symbol, just like the Berlin Wall going down, will this symbol go down, but we also could really put that money to good use. I mean, and I think a lot of that money should be to use to help the asylum seekers that were really hurt during this time with Trump being in office. So many people suffering, so many children pulled away from their families, now lost. We don't even know where they are. That money could be put to good use, and I really cross my fingers that it is going to be. But we'll be finding out soon in the next few months.
Yeah, hopefully. This seems like a slam dunk. It'd be very easy for him to change. He could do it unilaterally. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's definitely going to be done, or it's definitely going to be done promptly, or that it isn't going to be replaced by, you know, them approving of some sort of immigration reform bill later on in the Biden administration that further demonizes people who are just trying to flee violence and those sorts of things. So we do have to be on our guard for this, but not wasting yet more billions of dollars on this seems like a good thing. Whether that money is repurposed to help out the asylum seekers or immediately thrown into loan forgiveness for Dreamers, I can think of a lot of different things that you could use several billion dollars for, all of which would be better than building a big stupid wall.
Yeah, so can the oil money takers and the farm money takers in Biden's administration. They can think of a lot to do with that money too.
Exactly, probably. Really fast, I'm gonna jump ahead slightly, but I wanna let you know that construction crews along the border have been working round the clock in multiple locations to build the barriers as fast as possible before Biden takes office. No, but that's weird. Because he's not gonna take office because they stole the election and the storm is coming. So aren't you, if you're hammering faster, isn't that an acknowledgement that Trump lost? Anyway.
Caitlin McEnany going up there and she does double talk every time. Like, we're fighting it, but there's gonna be this and then this. They can't make up their mind. It's they know he's not gonna be in office. It's really just meant so that people continue to have to doubt in the democratic process and really have doubt in this country, and it's working.
Yeah, and to be fair, the people who are working, even the people who own these construction companies, I have no idea if they're conservative. I'm sure they just want to soak up as much of those contracts as possible. Anyway, by the way, just a little update in terms of like, if all the other arguments that we've made against the wall haven't gotten through to you, if you're maybe conservative and you're watching this, or you know, maybe you're centrist or on the left, but you have a different view of immigration or whatever. I'm gonna jump to the last graphic. Undocumented migration has increased significantly during the years that Trump has spent heavily on the wall. Despite the completion of more than 400 miles of new fencing, border authorities made more than 70,000 detentions in October, November, the highest totals for those 2 months in more than a decade. So it appears that building this also doesn't accomplish the stated goal, which is to stop people from crossing over.
Yeah.
And who could have predicted that except all the people that did?
We knew that, yeah.
Okay, now that said, let's talk a little bit more about the area down near the border. We're gonna talk about Texas. Oh my God, wait, I'm hearing that Jordan is in the Twitch chat.
I can't wait to watch.
Going on in our chat. Exactly, should be a lot of fun. Can't wait for that. I know people are really anticipating it. Okay, we're slightly over, but we're gonna do one more story really fast because this is just amazing.
Right.
I read this article in Texas Monthly that just blew my mind. And it was basically a summing up of the experiences that a number of different wedding photographers are having down in Texas during the pandemic. And the I'll say callous, even though my heart really says evil way that they're treated by the people they're working for. I want to give you a couple of excerpts from it, but you should definitely go to Texas Monthly and read this because there's a lot more where this came from. But they say that one wedding photographer had already spent about an hour or two inside with unmasked wedding party when one of the bridesmaids approached her, and the woman thanked her for still showing up considering, quote, everything that's going on with the groom, which in theory could mean a lot of things right prior to a wedding, but in this case it was COVID related. When the photographer asked what she meant by that, the bridesmaid said that the groom had tested positive for the coronavirus the day before. The photographer says she was looking for me to be like, oh, that's crazy, like I was going to agree with her that it was fine. So I was like, what are you talking about? And she was like, oh, no, don't freak out. He doesn't have symptoms, he's fine. which is good, because if we've learned anything through the pandemic, it's that people without symptoms can't spread it. Wait, that's not true. That's not how that works at all. But apparently they thought so. And she recalls one bridesmaid telling her, I'm a teacher, I have 14 students. If I'm willing to risk it, why aren't you? Which is an amazing thing to say. That deserves a therapy session all by itself. Another said eventually everybody was gonna get COVID, so what was the big deal? Which is sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yes, if you act like this, probably most people will get COVID at some point. But anyway, Viviana, we've got more. I cannot believe that this is not like from March. These are the way people are treating photographers at these weddings all throughout the summer and early fall.
I guess everything's bigger in Texas, even ignorance. I don't know. And let me say this, if you're a teacher who has 14 students, for sure you're a private school teacher, and most likely you're a Christian private school teacher, and you don't even need a degree for that. So I'm just saying that's not a very good excuse. And I'm thinking maybe this is the new trend in COVID times. When you have a wedding, instead of catching the bouquet, you catch COVID.
Hey everybody, here comes the infection. You gather everybody in a group and then you sneeze into the group.
Groom throws a garter, coughs on it, and then lets it rip. Oh,
God. Exactly,
I don't even know why this photographer was even at this wedding indoors. She really, if she was cautious, she should have not
done that. To survive, I assume.
Like, people are doing what they have to do.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Well, I want to give you a little bit more from that photographer's experience. She recalled one conversation from that wedding before she left the reception. I have children, she told the bridesmaid. What if my children die? The bridesmaid responded, I understand, but this is her wedding day.
Who cares?
I think, I don't know what the correct response is to that.
There have been lawsuits.
Non-verbal, probably physical.
There have been lawsuits against people who are positive for HIV and AIDS, who have knowingly given it to somebody or exposed somebody to it without disclosing that information. And I wonder if we're gonna see that continuing as the months go on with COVID. If somebody dies because of somebody's negligence and inconsideration, I mean, who knows? You know, it's really callous to say, well, I've never understood that. People who have their, like, that's the most important day of your life. How sad, like that's, you know, I mean, that you'd be willing to let people die?
Yeah, or like, okay, maybe you think that, but then when someone says, what if my kids die? And you're like, yeah, but this is her wedding. How do you say that? But there's a lot of people that are just insane. And so let's fast forward to the only way that this story could have ended. A few days later, she started to feel sick and sure enough tested positive for the coronavirus. She informed the couple, but they didn't care, she says. They didn't offer to compensate her for the test, nor did they apologize for getting her sick. Like they didn't want to pay for the test. They didn't even say, I'm sorry I got you infected with COVID. We live in a world of, like, we think that there's something fundamental that connects all of us, but it has broken down along the way. And I have no idea if like that couple and the party was filled with like Trump fans. I don't know for sure that's the case. I mean, it's Texas, there's a good chance, but just there are people who, there is so much ignorance and misinformation that's been flowing around, and so many reasons for people who just want to pretend that it's not serious. It's excuses being given to them to do that, and this is what it looks like.
I mean, you would imagine that even if you accidentally expose somebody to COVID, that you would feel apologetic.
To knowingly
do it, and to be COVID positive and not be wearing a mask, I don't see how this is happening. Now, I've known for many, many years that we're a very individualistic country. That's why we have a hard time passing legislation to be proactive and try to prevent human suffering, because everybody just cares about themselves. And you have a lot of these libertarian ideology of like, well, if we all just take care of this Ayn Rand ideology, it's really, this is what it's like. When you see somebody suffering from your actions, and you just go, well, they have to deal with it. I dealt with it. Yeah. People really don't think it's a serious illness. They really don't.
Yeah. Well, and they mentioned in the article, by the way, that if you want, you can go, you know, because people obviously take photos of their weddings and they share them online and they hashtag them. You can go and you can find photos from these weddings and you can see what percentage of the people at what percentage of the weddings seem to be socially distancing or wearing masks and things like that. This is, you know, this is an awesome experience. It's been relayed by awesome as in like it really makes you think. It's not good, obviously, of this one photographer, but you can see this is happening at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of weddings, and not just in Texas. Like California had 50,000 cases reported yesterday. That was the whole country a few months ago. Now it's just California. How do you get to those numbers?
Right.
By weddings and by all sorts of other, the exact sort of way that you'd think, by lots of people doing that. That's how you get to it. That's why we have the numbers.
Here's the struggle though, John, and I don't know if you have any answers to this, but it's like, how do you enforce mask wearing? How do you enforce stay-at-home orders? Because you don't, I mean, they were real quick to roll out the National Guard when there were protests in the street and somebody broke a window, but yet we can't enforce these mandatory stay-at-home orders or mask orders. And you know what, I don't want a Gestapo going on, and of course they're gonna be unfairly targeting people of color and poor people, but how do you enforce this? Do you just shut down the wedding? Are there people to go in there and just be like, no, everybody out?
I don't have answers to pretty much anything, let alone this. Our best bet was to provide some sort of social incentives, is for people to encourage others to do it, for it to be seen as a patriotic thing or a responsible thing or whatever. And many countries were apparently able to do that, and we weren't one of them because we are flawed in ways, I guess. Our people are flawed in ways that they aren't. Our government and our media are flawed in ways that theirs aren't. And so that was the best way. I don't want people kicking down doors and stuff like that. But what I also don't want is for people to be putting pressure on other people to not wear masks. And that's what we've gotten. We've gotten more pressure in the opposite direction than encouraging people to be responsible.
John, are you going to take the vaccine?
Yeah, definitely.
I
want to go back to the gym. I want to go back to normal. Like, I want to go to the movie theater eventually. Like, finally, if that's the only way I'm going to get to see Black Widow, because Marvel apparently cares more about getting that money than people not getting sick. If that's the only way I can see Black Widow and James Bond, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the vaccine.
Well, I have qualified to be one of the early recipients of the vaccine because prior to COVID, I was a volunteer at the hospital, Cedars-Sinai. And so they sent me an email a couple of days ago saying that I can get on the list. I'm a little bit nervous because the Pfizer vaccine seems like a one that they're not quite sure of all of the side effects yet, but we'll see. And I honestly want to get back to volunteering at the hospital. They need it more now more than ever.
Yeah, and that certainly help, especially with what's coming over the next few weeks. Well, that's awesome. And you know what else is awesome? You're awesome. Thank you for joining us on the show today. Had a lot of fun. Really appreciate your perspective. And I was watching on YouTube and Twitch, and the reaction was very positive as well, as it always is. So thank you.
Thank you guys so much. Stay safe, John. And I will be watching your Twitch show right now.
Thank you. Oh, really fast. Is your Friday show, is that on hiatus?
No, as you know, I have been doing a fun Instagram show where a good friend of mine, and you might know her because she's your wife, Arlene Santana, and I have been doing Frisky Fridays, we call it. And we just sort of, you know, chop it up about what's been going on in during the week. We often get very animated and angry sometimes, and sometimes we just laugh and have a lot of fun. So you can check us out on Instagram. It'll be on Instagram Live on Fridays, roughly around noon. Viviana Vigil _, and I think hers is at Arlene Santana. I have another show, Contextualize This, that is Twitter based and YouTube based, and that will be coming back again at the beginning of the year.
Awesome. Sounds good. And thank you again.
Thank you. Happy holidays. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.